I'm in a shade. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens, and painting. Throw it in the water, they swear the sky's daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore, they evil that I'm facing. I'm going 90, mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
Because they have America as a property manager to the British Empire. So really what happened is the people who created Israel really had cut a deal with the British Empire in the late 1800s in order to bring forth their own country. So the bankers needed military, the military needed banking, and they found this out around the time of Napoleon up through the mid-1800s. And by the end, you've got Rockefellers, the Rothschild. You know, Rothschilds, you know, they controlled the Nobel oil monopoly for Europe, much similar to the Standard Oil, was covered by Rockefeller here in America. So Rockefeller starts out in oil, goes into banking. Rothschilds start out in banking, go into oil. In the late 1890s, they start doing mergers and they form a syndicate. This is in with the British Empire. And so once America fights in World War II, they are joined at the hip to the British Empire in a special relationship and sharing all the intelligence. And the former enemy, arch enemy of America, created OSS, CIA, NSA, all the things that we think of as our intelligence agencies.
You just heard today's guest, author, researcher, and host of the Grand Theft World podcast, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this episode with Richard Grove.
And then,
what's that?
And then, how long were you looking to go for?
We'll go for anywhere between an hour and 90 minutes, if that's cool.
Yeah, I can do an hour easy. I might get hungry by the end of the hour because I haven't eaten yet today, but we'll see how far we go.
No worries. All right, we're recording now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Mystic Mark. Today on the show, returning to the show, the friend of the show, Kurt Metzger's rabbi, the man behind Autonomy and the show Grand Theft World, Richard Grove, back on the show again. Thanks for joining me. And you're just updating me about some local politics, some freedom advocacy you were doing recently. Aside from that, which we will get into that, how have you been? What have you been up to? How's Grand Theft World doing?
I've been great. Thanks for asking. I'm doing wonderfully well. Grand Theft World is thriving. I got recently upgraded from Kurt Metzger's rabbi to Kurt Metzger's shaman, allegedly. Like, people hear these things, they text me and they're like, hey, Kurt was on maybe Danny Jones or something like that. So being upgraded to shaman is, it's probably preferable to rabbi. Although I took rabbi to mean teacher, and I always just joked around that it meant like, it was an abbreviation of rabbit hole concierge. Because I've been sending Kurt books for a couple years. I know he has a voracious reading appetite. And when people have access to a platform like Jimmy Dore, I was just like, this dude's already on the field. Let's just start sending the best evidence to the people in the positions where they're speaking truth to power. And there was a time, you know, not long ago, they had a presidential election. And in that election process, there was this character called Vivek Ramaswamy. Mm-hmm. And Ramaswamy was going on Jimmy Dore's show. So Kurt texted me. He's like, hey, what do you got on Ramaswamy? And I was like, right here, press this button. So Jimmy presses that button, and Ramaswamy was not too comfortable for the whole interview. And it was all about his support for Zionism and unconditional support for Zionism, and bringing facts to someone in that position, as Jimmy did, made Vivek, you know, not come off so well in his marketing pitch for being president. So Kurt's been integral, not just making you laugh, but he's out there spreading seeds of truth. And I've been highly entertained in his acquisition of props for his appearances. You know, he's got the pipe, he's got the glasses, you know, he's got various head garbs, he's got capes. It's pretty soon he'll probably have magic wand or something like that. So,
I'm already in the workshop right now, making him a wand and a cape as well. We got to make him a judge's robe and a cape, but
can we work on that for a second? Here's the idea, dude. Hold on.
Hit me.
Taking a sip. In America, we have cowboys, right? But in England, it's like their equivalent of cowboys are like wizards, right? I think there's a joke to that effect. So make him some Harry Potter type of stuff, dude. I bet he'd love to rock that. Right. Make him a palantir, like a screen glass that when someone asks him a question, he can look into the, like the magic eight ball type of thing and be like, well,
like a goblet overflowing with like dry ice type smoke. And there's like a crystal ball with like a dragon's claw holding it up. Oh yeah.
There's even, what's it called? The greedy cup siphon. There's an ancient Greek cup that like overflows, but like so it's this whole type of physics trick that they did back then. But if you took something smart like a greedy cup siphon and then you make it like Tim Dillonize it and put a palantir on top of it or something, so it's got a meaningful base, but like, you know, you're making fun of their ability to see the future. Oracle just dropped like 30,000 people. Speaking of palantirs and oracles and things that see into the future, there seem to be a lot of those types of projects these days.
Yeah, when you say dropped 30,000 people, you mean like...
Oh, they fired them.
Right.
They fired them in a horrific way. All right, so like 25 years ago, my wife used to work for Oracle, and she was in sales in New York for like media and publication, right? And her telesales rep back then ended up being a producer for a Mark Passio conference like 15 years ago. And so I was the producer. I did the production for it. So I got hired by her former telesales rep to do this conference here in Connecticut. And then it was so good, we did another one, right? So his name's Art. Art might listen to your podcast. At least I'll send it to him. So Art sends my wife a text and he's like, hey, I just got this from someone at Oracle who just got canned today. And it was the coldest email, dude. It, like, they don't even have person to person. Remember in Office Space, how the guys would like have the dudes in there, like, what do you do for, you know, what do you do for the company? And then they don't even do that. They just send you an email. And it's like, we have been deciding and we have decided your position doesn't exist anymore. Have a nice day. You're gone. And even the news coverage of it that I saw today, they also got that it was pretty cold and heartless. And you're looking at a multi-billion dollar global behemoth company, and they are the cutting edge of everything that's like available, and they've got all the consultants that they need, and they still can't figure out how to fire someone with some grace or treat them with some humanity. And they certainly can afford to, but these are the people that want to bring AI server farms and like technocracy to every device near you. Like, my toaster doesn't need to have Bluetooth connectivity. Like, can we just get back to the simple things that just do the thing and don't have to connect into the cyber, you know, surveillance complex?
Yeah, I mean,
is that an option? Can we push that button?
I hope so. Yeah. I hear this kind of stuff and, you know, I lean towards being incredibly cynical. I almost think the system itself, these corporations, you know, they sort of operate in a way that is so cold, cruel, and calculating. They almost need to sacrifice people in that way to exist. You know, it's like built into how these corporations function. You know, they plan for hiring and firing people. And I'm sure it affects the company in a beneficial way when all these people are, you know, basically put in a situation where, you know, hopefully they're able to find a new job or otherwise, you know. But yeah, it's definitely, again, makes me lean towards the cynical side of things when I hear that.
Can I add to your cynicality before I take it away?
Sure.
I'm not going to take it away, but I might assuage it a little bit. Since it's audio, I am going to read it into the record. If I haven't done this for you when I was here before, I think it ties in with what you were just saying, right? And this comes from 1911, published in 1913. These are Woodrow Wilson's, he's running for president. These are his speeches. So the book is called The New Freedom. And It is a call for the emancipation of the generous energies of a people. So he's giving these speeches. Ironically, it's published in London because they probably were the puppeteers of this whole thing. But he was able to, on page 12, articulate a view that a lot of people have tried to use to describe how things work. And oftentimes it gets boiled down. It gets paraphrased because it's in the reason I got this book in first edition was that oftentimes when they paraphrase, like I wanted to see if the quote existed. Is it that bad? Is it worse? Right? The quote makes it look like it's pretty bad. If I can find veracity and say, oh, well, it's hyperbolic, then I don't need to take it seriously. But when I got this book, it starts on page 12 and the topic goes on for like 8 pages. It's a big topic, but this is the gist in a couple paragraphs. Since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid of somebody, are afraid of something. They know that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. They know America is not a place of which it can be said, as it used to be, that a man may choose his own calling and pursue it just so far as his abilities enable him to pursue it. Because today, if he enters certain fields, there are organizations which will use means against him that will prevent his building up a business which they do not want to have built up. Organizations that will see to it that the ground is cut from under him and the markets shut against him. For if he begins to sell to certain retail dealers, to any retail dealers, the monopoly will refuse to sell to those dealers, and those dealers will be afraid and not buy the new man's wares. And this is the country which has lifted to the admiration of the world its ideals of absolutely free opportunity, where no man is supposed to be under any limitation except the limitations of his own character and of his own mind, where there is supposed to be no distinction of class, but no distinction of blood, no distinction of social status, but where men win or lose on their merits. And then he goes on to tell you that's a pipe dream. It's not going on. And, you know, you'd be lucky if you understood his words and ever got it back, let alone in the next 100 years. So when you see little artifacts like that, that would make you say, Mark's right. Mark's right. We can all just be, you know, demoralized by the situation, right? We could be blackpill. On the other hand, what does it say that that existed for a long time and then was discovered? And then people can hear it and understand it and understand there's pieces of evidence that point toward something controlling things that's above the government that you're voting for in the schoolhouse rock metaphor of how things work in the world, right? It gives you a peek behind the curtain into the powers that are that actually construct the world the way we see it is. So Woodrow Wilson, who was president, he had a handler. His handler was called Colonel House. I have Colonel House's private papers behind me. Woodrow Wilson was famous and got reelected because he kept us out of war, much like Trump didn't start new wars in his first term. Woodrow Wilson in his second term took America to World War I with the instructions coming down from Lord Grey in Britain and Colonel House and Samuel Untermeyer above the president of the United States. And they, I have their private papers. Like you could see them talk about like, what if a ship was, you know, a U.S. passenger ship was attacked by Germany. Would America get into the war? And they're like, yeah, that would probably work. And then within hours of the King and Lord Grey having this meeting with like Colonel House, the thing happens. And all of a sudden, America's getting into the war and fulfilling the Balfour Declaration, which was a promise for land. It's a receipt for land. It's in exchange for a group of people bringing America into that war. Benjamin Friedman, in his book Facts or Facts, would describe that entire situation. He was at Versailles. He later split with the Zionist contingency that was at Versailles, and he became a staunch anti-Zionist. He has a famous 1961 Willard Hotel speech where he articulates the entire story of how America was brought into World War I. And as incredulous as I was when I heard Benjamin Friedman, I looked up all the stuff and Unfortunately, for the story of the narrative of the official story, there's a lot of facts and reality and artifacts and evidence that go along with that story. So as we are, on the preface of a larger world war type of thing unfolding, with so many countries already involved and so much U.S. military personnel and machinery being moved over to a place that really never had a direct attack on America. In fact, if it did, that would just be blowback from the 1953 CIA coup, where a young CIA is created in 1947, right before the State of Israel. So they're like the same age. So just a couple years later, the older cousins, MI6, with much more experience, they take America over to Iran and they overthrow democratically elected leader, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, and they install someone who's friendly to the oil monopoly, which, British petroleum came from Iran in the first place. It was the Anglo-Iranian oil company and also the Anglo-Persian oil company, because they went from calling it Persia to Iran in the 20th century, I believe. So there's a lot of history to what's going on today, but you're never going to get it from watching the news. It's all fragmented. You can never understand. So you do need to understand a little history, but then you can see current events in a clear lens of where they're steering the world and what they want you to do. And then you could be a contrarian and just kind of do the opposite. So that's the optimistic mentality. We can learn our way out of it.
Right. And as we were discussing earlier, before we started recording, there are examples of where you can participate on a local level and stand up for your freedom and make a positive impact, make a difference. So yeah, it's not all cynical in no way. But peeling back these onion layers and figuring out how we get from Woodrow Wilson to, people like Vivek Ramaswamy, people who are Zionists today. Now we have information coming out that Israel is saying they won't send troops into this war with Iran. Everything I've heard up until this point is that Israel's 100% behind all of this. And now it seems like, they're at least signaling to the rest of the world their disinterest in this conflict, as weightless and really unmeaningful as that may be, considering what we already know. What do you think that signifies? So this sort of, I don't know what
well, you call it. I think it signifies the fact that because they have America as a property manager to the British Empire. So really what happened is the people who created Israel really had cut a deal with the British Empire in the late 1800s in order to bring forth their own country. So the bankers needed military, the military needed banking, and they found this out around the time of Napoleon up through the mid 1800s. And by the end, you've got Rockefellers, the Rothschild, Rothschilds, they controlled the Nobel oil monopoly for Europe, much similar to the Standard Oil was covered by Rockefeller here in America. So Rockefeller starts out in oil, goes into banking. Rothschilds start out in banking, go into oil. In the late 1890s, they start doing mergers and they form a syndicate. This is in with the British Empire. And so once America fights in World War II, they are joined at the hip to the British Empire in a special relationship and sharing all the intelligence. And the former enemy, arch enemy of America, created OSS, CIA, NSA, all the things that we think of as our intelligence agencies, right? And then they spawn off a new country, 1948, Israel, but it's in the same intelligence awareness system, so they can't really be disambiguated. So now, because it can't be disambiguated and because they've got decade upon decade upon decade of blackmail and assassinations and attacks on our military and all sorts of, stealing uranium to create their secret, bombs that they don't have, but they can go after Iran because they're trying to get one. There's just layer upon layer of things that would be hard for America to disintegrate out, like get out of its system, to detox from, right? So with that, America is going to have to, because it's larger population, they can't, Israel's got to defend itself. It's already got 8-front war going on. So it's going to have to be American soldiers that are doing the impossible. Like strategically, Iran is not a place you want to mess with because it's surrounded by mountains, and you know, it's like Afghanistan squared. Look at it on a map, especially one that has terrain. And then if you don't have a plan to take the Strait of Hormuz, you know, straight out of Compton, straight out of the gate, you know what I'm saying? There's nothing to do over there. And if Israel and Bibi Netanyahu has been planning this war for 30 or 40 years, according to his own words, why was there no plan to acquire, even slowly over time or through, you know, various other means, the control over Strait of Hormuz? Because it seems to be a big deal, because you can't move all your toys in there to make war when you have such little coastline at the bottom. You got to get through the Strait of Hormuz. And there's a lot of other, like, ally countries that have been fired upon, cut off from water, desalinization plants threatened, all these other things that happen just because they're friends with the U.S. in that area and they share the Persian Gulf. So Top Gun 1 was about the Exotac anti-ship missile that can be launched from 100 miles. Like, that's the quality of, like, weaponry that Iran has, and that was Persian Gulf back then when Maverick gets all scared. So there's a lot to any of these situations, but the hidden hands in it are, first off, the United States and Great Britain have had overthrow, and then they plundered the production of the country, right? So here's how it worked. Mossadegh nationalized Iran's oil. So he cuts off the Anglo-American Israeli establishment. And they're like, huh, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to go in. We're going to overthrow that guy. By the way, they did regime change without ground forces. Why can't we do that today? I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying they seem to be pretty good at it back in the day and pretty sloppy at it these days. Or maybe they figured out how to make it more expensive. And that's kind of what they're doing. So there's the aspect of we've been messing with their country. And when I say we, I mean the Anglo-American establishment, like people who live in America and Britain aren't the culprits. We didn't do it, but like our countries did. And so they set up the situation where you end up having the Ayatollah take power in the late 70s, which caused the last gas crisis like this, right? And that is just an example of, if you want an enemy that can't be dealt with, you have to put religious extremists in control. It's the same strategy that Israel used with Hamas in Palestine. So Yasser Arafat wants to come to the table. He wants to cut a deal. They can't have that. They can't have reasonable people and reasonable perspectives that people might adhere to. They have to have someone that everyone has to say, you know, do you disavow Hamas? Yeah. Because they're funded by Bibi, and he sent them $35 million a month through Qatar. And that was admitted in that leaked Bibi interrogation tape last week. This was a known. And when 10/7 happened, I said, the Israel can go straight to Qatar. That's where the leaders of Hamas are, and you're funding them. So, like, leave the innocent people of Gaza out. But they've killed, you know, by the official score, 70,000 people there, and it's probably a real body count of 200,000 people once you go through the rubble. It's unconscionable because it's happened on our watch. But I digress. Did I actually answer your question? We'll make sure I did.
I think, you know, when it comes to this conflict, people are seeing through it for the most part. It's pretty obvious, the hidden hands. And in that case, you know, I think a lot of people are forced to question, you know, is America really the target here, you know?
Well, I mean, America's been the target the whole time. So to draw out the idea, let's see, if we start in the 1860s, right? If we start in the 1860s, there's some cats in Britain who are opining that, you know, we would be in charge of the whole world by now, because they had just subjugated India and China in the 1800s, right? So the Mughal Empire of India gave the British East India Company immense riches. And then the China, you know, dehumanization for a century, that opium hooking them on a get a whole bunch of money. So they got the money flowing, and they're like, oh man, if we just had America, we'd be in charge of the whole world at this point. So at this point in history, they start coming up with plans. And so there's a dude at Oxford called John Ruskin, And Ruskin has this idea to bring America back into the empire. And he has a student there called Cecil Rhodes. And Rhodes moves off to South Africa. He becomes in charge of diamond and gold syndicates. He's funded by the Rothschild family. He dies early. He leaves his money back to the Rothschild family. The Rothschild family create the Cecil Rhodes scholarships. So Rhodes scholars like Rachel Maddow or George Stephanopoulos or Wesley Clark or Bill Clinton are really Rothschild scholars because the Rothschilds funded the Rhodes Scholarship Program at Oxford, according to Sir Anthony Kenny in the History of the Rhodes Trust, in the appendix. You have to read the appendix to find that information, but it's in there and I have the book. I should know. I read the book. So in these situations, you have a plan to scuttle America. So how do you do it? Well, you have to put America at perpetual war. And this is found out by the Ford Foundation. And technically, it's the Rees Committee in the 1950s. And the lead researcher was a guy called Norman Dodd. And Norman Dodd was Andover and Yale and worked at J.P. Morgan. And they put him in charge of this case. And they went and they sent a lawyer to the Carnegie Foundation first. Her name was Catherine Casey. And Catherine Casey goes to the Carnegie Foundation and Trust, and she starts looking at their records, right? So in this realm where she's looking through their records, she like, you know, in 1908, the question is like, is there any means to better to take over a country than to take over statecraft? Right. And then once they figure out how to take over a country, now how do we keep that country at war? Right. And as they go through, they start answering questions and being able to do things that otherwise it's not legal to do. But these are tax exempt foundations founded by billionaire scion type people. Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Endowment, Carnegie whatever the International Peace Endowment is. So now you've got this perfect storm. There's a plan. Cecil Rhodes leaves a last will and testament to create a secret society to bring America back into the empire. Coupled with, in America, you've got these internationalist foundations that are taking over statecraft, controlling foreign policy, changing our education system into a schooling system, taking etymology out so no one understands the meaning of the words that they're using or the history or the use of the spelling, because there is a certain word magic to the whole thing, and they don't want you to have any knowledge of how to use your words to create the environment you're looking for. They want you to be subject or understand, stand under their words, because you don't know how to use words. So there's all this stuff that they start doing, and they admit to it in the 1950s, in the Rees Committee. So the books would be Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And then there's also the Dodd Report, which is the official report. And it says that these internationalist foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and more, were conducting un-American activities specifically to the guy that ran the Ford Foundation, Rowan Gaither. He told the lead investigator, Norman Dodd, he said, off the record, he's like, Mr. Dodd, we can never say this publicly, but our mandate, which comes from higher than the president, is to be able to merge the Soviet mentality with the United States mentality to bring about a world government, right? And so, you know, topical world government, that goes back a long time to the early 1900s and the first couple generations of the Warburgs. And to like when they're like, you'll have a world state whether you like it or not. These are the same people that brought in the Federal Reserve. And when you read The House of Warburg by Ron Chernow, the official authorized New York Times bestselling biography, they tell you the Warburgs mentored under the Rothschilds, literally lived with the Rothschilds to learn how to do trading in their name in America. Now, in 1908, I don't know how the other elections work, but in 1908, there was three Warburg brothers, Max, Felix, Paul, I think they were, and they each bought an American candidate. So no matter who won, Warburgs and thus Rothschild had some sort of influence and control. So this is not conspiracy theory. This is learning how to be literate and comprehend and read our actual history. Some of the artifacts can be found in New York Times bestselling books by Ron Chernow or memoirs by David Rockefeller, where he says, you know, people often accuse me and my family as being internationalists. He's like, I stand guilty of it. So he admits it, like page 405 of his memoirs. So the evidence of the things going on are all over the place, but they've just been feeding people bread and circus so that they don't have a chance to come up for air or actually think about the terrarium that's been created to block them from the outside world. So in short, wake up, Neo.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. We're going to take a quick moment to thank Vibe Med X, the show's sponsor, the number one source of Shilajit. What's Shilajit? Well, it's more than a mouthful. It's a supplement that you take with your mouth. That's right. A dietary supplement that's good for you. It's full of humic acids and all kinds of things that are actually good for you. It's Shilajit. Look it up. We talked about it on the podcast. Do you know what it is? You probably heard me tell you about it 100 or more times. So do I want to repeat myself 100th time? Probably not. Is that the job I signed up for? Yeah. So let me remind you, you can listen to my interview with Ron to get all the details from an expert, or you can hear a semi-capable stoner tell you what it is. And it's, let's just say it's the vitamin of the gods. So use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. That's vibemedx.com. That's where you'll be checking out. And use the promo code CRAZY and you'll save. Okay. And sign up for the Patreon, patreon.com/MFTIC, where you get exclusive content like our new episode with Michael Wan that's only available on Patreon and Substack. Go and check that out right there, right now.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Well said. Yeah, it's more clear than ever, though, that they're having a hard time keeping all of this stuff under wraps, and with it going all the way up to the monarchy. Speaking of the Epstein scandal now, you know, we have disclosure, if you will, on the highest level that these politicians are actually guilty of wretched and disgusting crimes. I mean, this is something that left, right people have come to terms with. You know,
people are pointing the finger at different politicians, depending on what side of the aisle you fall, if you're biased to that degree. But, you know, I think for the most part, it's become a nonpartisan subject that most people admit, you know, not a conspiracy, true fact. I mean, what do you think of this? And considering the work you've done in the past, mapping out information, have you gotten into the Epstein emails and any of the information that's come out yet?
I've had the occasion a couple times live when we're doing Grand Theft World to go to justice.gov and, you know, do a couple searches. And I had the searches written down for that period, but I threw it away. So let me do it off the top of my head. It was like gynecologist. There's emails from Epstein's brother, Mark, saying, who's the gynecologist you use for your victims? And Epstein responds, in what state? Meaning he has people who help him in multiple states to do that.
Yeah.
There was a couple other emails that I had listed. So if I wanted, I could go to gtw.clipgenie.com and I could search and I could find those answers. But the gist was, I haven't used web. So I haven't used Ian Carroll's software. I haven't used Jmail. I might've gone there once and searched something. I thought that was pretty cool though, that they like made an emulator to make it look like you're in the email box and you could search it and find contacts and timelines. I think it's an impressive treasure trove so far, but I'm aghast at the point that the people in power are actively protecting the predators behind those little black rectangles of redaction. So there are people actively at the Justice Department, the FBI, the executive branch that are blacking out people who are the actual people on the list. If you want to look for an Epstein list, it's behind all those black bar redactions. And there's millions of files that are not released yet. And that's just what we know. Like, there could be a lot more. Like, if he's doing surveillance, there's a lot of footage someplace. And I would imagine that footage belongs to a nation state that set up that operation in the first place, because it was the same nation state that ran Robert Maxwell in America, putting back doors into legal software, taking over textbook publishing for schools, and helping to acquire uranium for Israel's illegal nuclear program. So if that play wasn't stopped, why wouldn't they just run it again with the dude's daughter and her boyfriend?
Right. Right. And all that in light of what we talked about in the earlier part of our conversation. I mean, is it surprising to anyone that after this whole blackmail scheme is being revealed and simultaneously covered up, that we're also, you know, at the, you know, every whim of this same nation, you know, like, I don't know. I feel.
Is there a connection between the Iran invasion and the timing of the Epstein mail emails?
Yeah, that's a great way to phrase that question. Thank you.
I mean, I think that they were in a position where they were ready to start a war to get everyone's attention off the Epstein emails, at least for now. And, you know, slowly just normalize such things. It normalize means the public knows, but no one did anything about it because they found out so slowly over time that like the urge to like cut the snake head off left, you know, it's so they have a strategy and this is how they've survived through history. These are just, when I say they, I'm just talking people who are willing to compromise themselves and their integrity for the gain and acquisition of power through plundering other people's freedom. So they don't belong to one race, religion, nationality, or creed. Though there are some philosophies that facilitate these types of activities readily and recruit other people who do likewise. So we're looking at multi-generational groups of psychopaths, and they sign a lot of their crimes with, you know, psychopathic signatures to recruit other psychopaths.
Yeah.
And there's layers upon layers probably to that metaphor out there.
Yeah.
From recruiting for intelligence in the military through how you become a politician that rises to the top and marries your school teacher who might be a man. I don't know.
Yeah, we know who
he worked at the Rothschild Bank though, Macron. See, that they tell you about his wife, so you don't know that he's like Rothschild groomed in the first place. He had a special relationship with Rothschild. There's a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, people can learn. It's not too hard to find out, but it's not as salacious as what some people might cover.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, we know all too well, I know all too well a lot of this stuff as somebody who's gone to Rose Valley on a little investigation trip. And actually just today, this afternoon, Kurt and I had Jay Parker on Kurt's podcast for an interview. And anybody who knows Jay Parker's story and his testimony, you know, this stuff goes deep into these elite families and, you know, whether, you know, Epstein's victims ever see justice or not. I don't doubt this kind of stuff's going to continue given the systematic nature of what it is. And I wonder, you know, is Epstein like, you know, the same way NASA is like a corporation doing business on behalf of the government, is Epstein the same thing where, you know, instead of this stuff being relegated to these weird family get-togethers and reunions, if you will, you know, Jeffrey Epstein is then taking it a step further and, you know, putting the old good old American capitalism on it.
Did you see Kurt's clip with Danny Jones where he's talking about the Rob Reiner father-son kissing things that were going on?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think Epstein was either brought up through that type of thing or he got the drop. So here's, I would say, my strongest hypothesis, because this is not based, I'll use facts to make the hypothesis, right? So it's not out of nowhere, but you don't have all the pieces, so you have to fill in with, it looks like maybe, right? So Epstein goes to summer camp with Bill Barr, who's later the Attorney General of the United States when Epstein is allegedly suicided in prison, right? So that's interesting. And then Epstein gets a job at the Dalton School working for Bill Barr's dad. So the question is, how do you go from summer camp to that jump? And I was like, maybe he went to summer camp with Bill Barr, and Bill Barr's like, my dad makes crazy books about space aliens who rape people. Right. And maybe Jeffrey got a little blackmail on Bill Barr's dad, because as soon as he starts at the Dalton School, brought in by Don Barr, Don Barr leaves. It's like Epstein replaced him. Right. So now Epstein's there. So later, just a couple years later, he has a very similar instance at Bear Stearns, where he was like tutoring the daughter of the guy who ran Bear Stearns. And then all of a sudden he's on the board of directors and making financial decisions and involved in Iran-Contra and a whole bunch of other stuff. Right. So he's definitely one of the interesting Forrest Gump characters in history of late, at least, because the level that he was doing things and the things he were doing exist beyond, both those things exist beyond people's, you know, ceiling for the narrative. They think it's like the Trump president from there down is how things happen. It's like, no, dude, he takes orders from a whole other inverted pyramid above him. And so people kind of get a glimpse into that, especially with like Rothschild being mentioned in the Epstein file something like 12,000 times. So it's not just like a casual mention. But if you rewind, Rhodes scholar, Rothschild scholar, Bill Clinton hosted not only Epstein at the White House, but Sir Evelyn and Lynn Forrester de Rothschild. They did their honeymoon at the White House. You know, some people go to Barbados or Hawaii. They use the American White House as their honeymoon suite. Okay. So when Hillary in the WikiLeaks is writing XOXO emails back and forth in maybe a very lazy type of way, maybe that's what they meant by laissez-faire. She's being fair with the other. Anyway, with Lynn Forrester to Rothschild, you know, there might be other layers at play. And it makes one of those videos that went around last week by I Can't Even Productions. Did you catch those AI videos about like the Eyes Wide Shut Epstein?
No.
Okay, so there's a video and it's called Monitoring the Situation. And it's by a new creator called I Can't Even Productions. And he had it's like the most advanced application of the clearest, most in focus, perfectly framed, perfectly, you know, choreographed AI set to music, and truth is unfolded through the whole thing. Like, there's a whole, like, you could watch it 10 times and still see new layers in it. And so I was working on something. I had a YouTube project going on, and I thought I just nailed it. And so I told my buddy T. Snyder, I said, "Tease, I said, I just made the perfect buggy whip." And then I saw a Model T just drive by. Here's the Model T. And he saw the AI video, because you can't compete with that. It holds your attention because it's inorganically made. If I tried to do any type of set prep and lighting and cinematography and camera motion, like, you can't emulate it very cheaply. But Hollywood's in trouble, let me tell you that. So anyway, those movies, those little shorts were pretty mind-blowing. I tacked them on at the end of last Grand Theft World, because those things need to go in the historical time capsule. That was like cutting-edge, mind-blowing content this week in 2026. And so as things continue to evolve, we can also go back and see how they evolved, which gets back to your question about the multi-generational nature. I read Fritz Springmeier's 13 Bloodlines, the Illuminati, back in the day. And again, I read it very incredulously, but he wrote some things in there that I was like, oh shit, if I put that with this other stuff, I know. So, you know, Abraham Lincoln got shot and he went across the street from Ford's Theater and he died in a bed, right? When I was in seventh grade, I had a history teacher who told me that that bed was actually in my hometown, Beaver, Pennsylvania. He's like, I won't tell you the family that has it, right? He's like, but he's like, because too many people used to go knock on their door and it's just in a basement. He said, but the bed that Abraham Lincoln died in is in this town. So then I'm reading Fritz Springmeier about the Todd family. Oh yeah, Mary Todd Lincoln, right? And then I was like, oh shit, Todd Funeral Home down the street, like that, you know. And then like, so it was, anyway, it was listening to Fritz Springmeier's book. They have a maiden name of Lincoln's wife who survived him, who's like, I don't know, do you think, like, I don't know where the bed might have come from. I didn't get all that story back then. But as you like read something that includes some local history, and then you had some little piece of local history, and they do share a name, and it is a multi-generate, like, they own a funeral home. That's not the normal thing that goes on. So anyway, there's a lot of esotericism is what I'm saying in the funeral business, I guess.
Yeah, no, and that is something Kurt has been talking about lately. I've picked that up, and maybe you're the source for that, but no doubt strange. And I mean, we both know, being in Connecticut, there's a ton of underground symbolism pertaining to the elites, pertaining to death and ritualism, you know, these sorts of Freemasonic near death rituals. But speaking of local history, contemporary history, you might not have seen this given your previous answer, but recently a researcher on Instagram, I think his handle is Josh James CT, but he covers ostensibly seems like just stuff about the Epstein emails. He must be new, pertaining to Connecticut. And not only did he find connections between Epstein and some of the upper crust prep schools that we both know are here in Connecticut.
Yeah, like Groton.
Well, I think it was in Middletown, the specific one that Epstein was connected to. I don't know the exact prep school off the top of my head, but we're talking, you know, under 18-year-old. This isn't college kids. And then Epstein also was emailing Brockman about a farm property that he owned, is what he made it sound like in the emails. But people have looked into this and it seems like his sister owned it.
Hmm.
But it's a property, a farm property in Bethlehem, Connecticut. And he's emailing Brockman about a private airport that he can fly into to access this farm property. I took it upon myself to drive by, given that I'm not too far away from Bethlehem, Connecticut. So I took the drive and, you know, just your typical Connecticut farm property, definitely a lot of space, and some of the barns were not visible from the road, but it's just a regular farm from the outside looking in. seemingly owned by the same person since 1996, I think is what the Zillow listing said. So yeah, that must be, if it's not Epstein, Epstein's family member, according to what I found. But yeah.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, not only did they have their posh outposts, but they also had places that, they could get other things done. Zorro Ranch was like a compendium of all of them. Like, you get running eugenics, and they got underground bunkers, and you got, you know, people buried in the desert, allegedly. But once they said they were going to search that site, then there was like excavation of those sites before they investigated them. So that would just seem like, if we were watching a show and it's like, okay, that they're doing something, like they're the bad guys. We said we were going to search, and all of a sudden they had to bring in, you know, tractors and move some stuff around. That would be the clue to go check it out more. But so far, the adjudication of such matters hasn't led to much more than people getting fired in other countries from other jobs for being embarrassed and linked up to it.
Yeah. Well, we do have at least another, local interest story. Professor at Yale, a computer professor, I think his last name was Galentis. I don't remember the exact name of this gentleman, but he was excused from teaching at Yale. I don't think it was permanent decision that was made. At least that's as of that story coming out. But yeah, he was asked to stop teaching after it came out that he was recommending his students to Epstein as potential interns. He was teaching computer science at Yale.
I mean, I'm sure he's probably not the only one.
Right. Right. And it's like these emails again, like we're not getting.
That's not Harvard. That's not MIT. That's not even a, you know, university that Epstein is traditionally known to be associated or affiliated with. So right. If that's what he's got running there, what's he running other places?
Right. Exactly. Like his network, clearly, even if those were just like loose connections for him, his network spanned pretty far and wide. And yeah, you know, anything pertaining to Connecticut, I'm interested in. Anything pertaining to Yale, I'm interested in. So I had my, you know, feelers out for those pieces of information and started looking around. I'm sure there's more. I mean, I've really only relied on other researchers because it is so overwhelming to try to look in, at least through the .gov portal. I haven't checked out Ian Carroll's site.
Yeah, it's AI. So they took all the documents, and it's so you could say, what is the evidence that Les Wexner was involved? And it would pull all the pieces together for you and make a compelling case. Yeah. And it's called Webb, named after Gary Webb, W-E-B-B. And I haven't checked it out yet because, like, I don't want to be the early adopter who gets my computer hacked because I downloaded some nonsense. You know what I'm saying? Let's make sure
it's a real
thing. It actually works before I go risking my OPSEC.
Yeah.
My InfoSec.
I can't say I have the same protocol, but I definitely steer on the side of being cautious and not running to be the first person to you know, look into this or be one to make a claim either. So yeah, kudos to those who are brave or dumb enough to do so. Going back to what you said about recommending stuff to Kurt Metzger, a book I gave him recently that I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this author in general, was Saucers of the Illuminati by Jim Keith. Jim Keith mysteriously.
Yeah, he did Mind Control, that book.
Right, Mind Control, World Encyclopedia, and a couple of other books on that same topic. But yeah, what do you think of Jim? Because he died under mysterious circumstances as well. And he wrote about the Danny Casolaro case, and which wasn't Gary Webb a part of that?
I don't think so. So
I think I might.
Let's draw it out. All right. So Gary Webb was doing crack cocaine, Freeway, Rick Ross, and he worked for the San Jose newspaper, possibly. And he has there's a book on his thesis, but that is separate from Casolaro, who was investigating the Robert Maxwell Promise backdoor in the prosecutorial management software scandal that got sold into our Justice Department and FBI and had an Israeli backdoor in it. So Casolaro was tracking down somebody, and then he ended up in a motel in West Virginia trying to meet a witness that was going to give him evidence, and he ends up suicided. And that's not much different than Michael Hastings or Aaron Schwartz or any number of Seth Rich. There's a whole lot of people who have, I guess, pulled up too close too quick, and they get some sort of reaction from the other side. I mean, Michael Hastings, he was blowing a whistle on generals at a time that that was not a thing to do. It could be very damaging to the United States intelligence and military and foreign. So you can see someone being declared a liability and someone ordering executive decisions or executive actions to remove such pebbles from their shoe. Aaron Schwartz had released a whole bunch of stuff that they didn't want released. Plus, he brought forward the really simple syndication RSS that is now ubiquitous on the internet. Seth Rich did the DNC leaks to WikiLeaks, which were highly damaging and contained those Rothschild emails I just referred to 20 minutes ago with Hillary Clinton. And so there's a lot of people like that, but that shouldn't discourage you from looking, because these people are doing what they're doing is wrong. They know it's wrong. That's why they lie about it. That's why they cover it up, because they knew if people knew the truth, they'd lose their power. I don't think they deserve power, and I think one of us gets it right eventually. So it's a numbers game.
Yeah, well said. And I don't mean to discourage anyone from looking into this stuff. I mean, proceed with caution at your own risk. But yeah, it seems like the buck has ended on that sort of culture of this information, given the proliferation of all this stuff on the internet, the easy access to, you know, freedom of speech. You know, in the past, you would have had to maybe publish something on your own to get a mass audience thinking about your ideas. Now it's as simple as, you know, making a clever TikTok video or putting something out on a podcast that gets popular, you know? So,
yeah, you go straight to market with it. Like, you know, back, you know, 25 years ago, if you didn't go to a Lowell Bergman and it didn't get made into a PBS investigation, nobody was going to know about it. But these days, that's kind of obsolete.
Right. Right. Well, as we start to wrap up here, I know you said you got about an hour in you. Where can people go to follow up with you? I noticed recently there's been a bunch of Grand Theft World published on YouTube. YouTube historically not friendly to this type of content, but something changed recently because we've been flying pretty high with Kurt's podcast, and Sam's been doing good with Tinfoil Hat not getting censored. I just had pretty good success with one of my videos on YouTube. So, but I notice you're posting on YouTube, looks like a bunch of episodes of Grand Theft World. So tell the people where they can get it first and foremost, and obviously follow on YouTube, but where does Grand Theft World come out every Sunday?
Yeah, let's see. I'm on YouTube as Richard Grove Official. I'm on Linktree as Richard Grove, so that's where all my links are. Grand Theft World airs every Sunday night from 9:30 p.m. till 4 or 5 a.m., and we wrap the week's news in a whole layer of history, plus we usually have a guest or two that helps elucidate some of these topics. And when people watch the show, they usually watch it either live or they're watching a replay. If they're watching a replay, they listen to like an hour per day, and it covers their whole week. But now they understand what happened last week instead of having a fragmented mentality. We have a members area, so we, you know, great town hall activities, people getting together, and we get to all talk to each other and have a great time for 3 hours every 2 weeks, so like twice a month. And in between time, I teach adults that which they used to teach us in education, but schooling does not provide, and it's called autonomy. You can learn about it at getautonomy.com. www.grandtheftworld.info. And we're enrolling right now for the spring session. So it's a 12-week sprint, and then we have 12 weeks off, and then we do it again in the fall. And some of our students have a lifetime enrollment in the course, so they keep coming back over and over again. And we've had 1,000 students go through, and you get the methods, the strategies, the tactics, the principles that you need to organize yourself, understand your environment, make goals, achieve those goals, build skills, and level up at any given time with asymmetrical problem solving and the human personal skills. We teach human skills for a human world, and it's getautonomy.info.
Right on. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join me and talk about some of this stuff going on in 2026. Follow up with Grand Theft World to stay up to date. And yeah, Richard, you're the man. Thanks, brother.
Hey, thank you, Mark. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate especially all the people that you help. And it was good hanging out when Sammy was here in Connecticut. And I hope we see you again soon, because Sam's not coming back for another year or so.
Yeah, we got to do something. Maybe.
How do we get Kurt booked at that opera house, dude?
That's a good call. We should talk to those guys, because they're big fans of Sam, and I'm sure they're...
Yeah, I talked to the owners that night. So, like, if you know how to get Kurt booked there, because he just played, I don't know, Passio was texting me last week, and because I said, hey, do you have Kurt's text? Because, you know, he had... Kurt had given a shout out to me and Passio maybe during Danny Jones or whatever was going on. So I texted Passio. I'm like, hey, you know, Kurt gave you a shout out. Do you have his text? He's like, oh yeah, I already texted with him. He said, I'm going to see him in Pottstown this Friday or whatever. And I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm like, dude, what the hell is Kurt doing playing Pottstown? But if that's where you get in and get the Philly crowd, that's have at it. But as soon as I saw that opera house when we were there with Sammy, I thought Kurt's playing this opera house sometime soon. We can all hang out.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, selfish man.
But
as his shaman, I think I'm going to call for it.
Yeah, we can make the link. I am almost certain I have the Instagram of the guy who books the shows at that opera house, and yeah, we'd love to get Kurt out here in the Nutmeg State. But thanks, Richard. Appreciate it. I'll see you sooner than then, hopefully. And until next episode, folks. Thank you for tuning in. And immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.